I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, we're going to be having an adult conversation about pornography. Anyone with access to the internet, they have access to a nonstop, inexhaustible supply of without limits, every variation of pornography. And we need to talk about the very real harm that this is causing. Harm to people and children who consume it, harm to the people who are used to produce it, and harm to a society that has monetized and dehumanized human intimacy. Studies indicate about 30% of global internet traffic involves adult content. 20% of American men report porn is negatively impacting their lives. So how do we address the harm that porn causes without stepping on art and free expression? Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first this.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. This is going to be an adult-themed source today. Not intended for children, but maybe it should be. But here's why. For many young people in America, their first experience with human intimacy comes from pornography rather than real-life relationships, sex education, or conversations with trusted adults. Studies show that a majority of boys and a significant percentage of girls are exposed to pornography before their first real-life romantic or sexual experience. The average age of the first exposure to pornography is estimated to be between 11 and 13 years old, although some studies suggest exposure is happening even earlier due to the unrestricted internet access that pretty much everyone has. We have, by default, handed over to the darkest corner of the internet the job of teaching our children about sex and intimacy, and the results are what you would expect. Unrealistic expectations, young people may develop distorted ideas about sex, relationships, and consent, lack of emotional connection, porn often depicts sex without intimacy, emotional connections in ways that do not reflect real-life relationships, objectification and performance pressure. Porn can reinforce gender stereotypes, body image insecurities, and performance-based views of sex, and the total confusion between intimacy and violence. And there's so much more. And to talk about that, we're joined by activist Maria Aline. She had a TED Talk that's called Let's Talk About Porn. It's been viewed over 10 million times. And Maria, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're really glad that you're here. I do want to know, like, how do you see your role? What do you see yourself as doing? Are you an anti-porn activist? Are you on a moral crusade? Do you see yourself as an educator? What is your role in dealing with this issue?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I think the last part is quite accurate, the educator. I really see also, I would say I see myself as somebody eager to inspire and start conversations, global conversations, local conversations, conversations within the home, like as a parent, talking to your young child about pornography in a way that is sort of age appropriate is really one of my sort of core missions, to get people talking with their children. And I'm very much about speaking to people within the porn industry as well, which I've done for several years. So yeah, I believe in like bridging the gaps and bridging sort of the groups as well, coming together and sort of finding and locating common ground.
Our phone number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. If you want to call in, you can be anonymous, talk about your struggles with pornography, what your experiences are, what your concerns are, what do you think ought to be done about pornography. You could also email me at thesource@tpr.org. You can text us at that call-in number, 833-877-8255. So, Maria, why is this such a difficult conversation to have? Obviously, you did your TED Talk, over 10 million views. You've spoken around the world many times, hundreds of times, talking about this issue. There seems to be a hunger for, like, okay, let's talk about this. But then again, it's still really difficult to do this. Why?
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, the talk, the TED talk, Let's Talk Porn, it really, I mean, I was so concerned about the title itself, you know, because that is, again, that's like the mission that I'm on. And so I was, when writing the script, I remember, because you go through it with, like, you have a coach and it's a, you know, it's a whole thing. And so the script was really, when I was like envisioning the talk sort of reaching the masses, I was very much focused on it being sort of a talk that would fit a lot of different people. So I was envisioning, you know, countries in Asia, countries in, you know, the Middle East, Europe, like Africa, you name it. And I really wanted it to sort of reach the corners of the world. And I think the numbers, I would say, you know, it speaks for itself that this is something that a lot of people want to talk about. But number one, we haven't talked about it. So that in itself sort of makes it a taboo topic. You know, it signals that this is something that you should not mention because it's not being mentioned. You know, we're not talking about it in schools. We're not teaching parents and educators, teachers, whatever, on how to have these conversations. And so that is a main problem, I would say. And the other sort of issue that I'm seeing is addiction, actually, or compulsive use to pornography. And I think with that, it comes a lot of shame as well. I met hundreds of people claiming to have some sort of issue when it comes to their relationship with porn. And so I think the shame is really sort of a roadblock in opening up these conversations. But I do find that once you talk about it, people are just so relieved. And again, I think the numbers for the TED talk really shows that. And also, you know, just the amount of DMs that I get and emails from people, you know, just sort of pouring out their whole story regarding porn. And oftentimes, you know, it might start with, you know, I've never told this story, you know, nobody knows about this, this is my biggest secret, etc. So I think there's this craving for these conversations.
Well, you want to remove the shame from talking about pornography. So we should put it out there that almost everyone is looking at pornography. We know that from the numbers. We know what internet traffic is like.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And I'm not saying that, because here's the thing, you know, with we can actually bring in our nervous system into this, because when we feel dysregulated, the worst thing that we can sort of do to ourselves is tell ourselves that, oh no, I'm dysregulated, I have to come back to this regulated state.
I don't know what that means. What do you mean by dysregulated?
Okay, dysregulated means that you're in some kind of stress response. So you're in fight, flight, freeze, or fawn.
Okay.
Instead of being regulated, grounded, feeling authentic, feeling like your best self. Right.
Okay. So you go for some sort of self-soothing sort of a process.
Yeah. Like you have a stress response, and our nervous system will give us a stress response depending on what is stressful in our life. And that is totally, that's the way it should be. But when we are dysregulated, when we are, let's say I am in flight and I don't want to be present with this stressful thing, whatever it is, and I'm in flight, the worst thing that I can actually do to myself in that moment is tell myself that it is wrong to be stressed. It is wrong to be dysregulated. It is wrong for me to go into a flight mode, because that just sort of that makes this sort of like spiral. You're just spiraling with that. Mm-hmm. And so my point is that when we are telling ourselves that, and again, this is like two thoughts in the head at once, because we're telling ourselves that porn usage is wrong, or, you know, that making, what I'm trying to say is that making our porn usage wrong might actually increase our problematic use of porn.
Right.
And I'm not saying, you know what I mean? So I'm not saying that we should totally normalize it or just make it into this non-issue that we do not care about. But I am saying that we have to sort of bring up the numbers, like you said, you know, like really.
Well, we should at least talk about it. and be aware of the harm that it's caused and the production and the viewing and what it's doing to our young people and even to people who are
just, yeah.
So there's a lot here to unpack. So we got to hit a break here. Our lines are open. No judgment here. 833-877-8255. The source continues after this.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're having a conversation about pornography, about it's widespread, it's easily accessible, it's out there. If you're connected to the internet, you have access to this. And it is having an impact in our society on intimate relationships. It's, there's a lot of negative connection to pornography. We're joined by Maria Aline. She is a public speaker and author and educator. She's the CEO of Changing Attitudes, a nonprofit organization that is dedicated to eliminating attitudes that lead to sex buying by focusing on education about pornography and its health effects. And you can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we do have a caller, and let's go to Sean. And Sean, you're on the air.
Yes, David, thank you for taking my call. I'm just remembering that I guess it was like about 1980. I would have been 13 years old, and it was the first time I was invited to the deer camp. And, you know, this was all guys like, and there was a Playboy magazine, which I think, that, you know, even though they don't show nudes anymore, I thought that was kind of a tasteful thing of things. And I was just crazy stunned. Now, what are these kids looking at? It's just, it's out there, and I'm going, my gosh, what in the world has happened to what people think about what the female and the male body does and stuff? It's just insane. It's absolutely insane. And I would like to hear your expert off the air. Thank you very much.
Well, Sean, thank you so much for that. Is actually kind of a common experience, Aline. That was your experience too, wasn't it?
Yeah, I too actually remember seeing the Playboy magazine, and I was about, I think, 12 or 13, and some of my best guy friends in school brought it to school, and it made such an impression that I still remember it to this day. And I mean, again, that was a magazine, right? Still photos, nothing even close to what we're seeing today. And yeah, I agree. And I met thousands of kids and youth who will tell you that they have not even went looking, they're not even going looking for porn, but they end up on a porn site. And, you know, you can even have this kid that's like, okay, so I'm curious, I want to know something about sex and boobs and, you know, whatever. And the thing that child is going to imagine, you can't even compare it to what that child will then be exposed to going on, let's say, Pornhub, you know, that gap is just, it's beyond. And not only the gap, but the sort of the unlimitless buffet, table that's available. It's just this sort of black hole where you can just spend hours and hours and hours viewing content. And the desensitization as well that really happens quite quickly, actually, with our brain, you know, getting used to a certain type of content, making that in a while that's going to be boring, you're going to create something else, etc. So, yeah, it really takes people on a journey.
Right. But the confusion of violence and dressing it up as human intimacy, I mean, it's just and the unrealistic presentation of what is going on is happening. But how do we educate young people into recognizing that that is not real? What they're looking at is a lie.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I do. So I go into schools and I go into universities and I do just talks all over with kids, youth, you know, students, teachers, whatever. And that really is the challenge, I would say, because it is also, in a sense, very sort of unfair to put that responsibility on a 12, 13, 14-year-old to sort of be able to do this whole analysis of that content and the possible, you know, the impact. And so I see that if we have to sort of do something about this, which I think that we do, we have to use some kind of legal tool possibly. And we also have to just look at the education in schools. So are we talking about this from a very early age or are we not, you know? And it's not about sort of introducing a six-year-old to a conversation about Pornhub, but it is about starting, and also much younger than you think, starting to talk about the body, body parts, consent, my body, your body. You know, that sort of boundary is so important. And to talk about sex in general as well, because I think now we are not talking, most of us are not having even the sex sort of talk or talks, which it should be, several talks with our children. And so the porn industry really is beating us to it. So you have a child not speaking about sex or body even, and then boom, Pornhub enters, you know? So it's just,
right.
It should be flipped. Yeah.
So here in Texas, it would be almost like a criminal act for a teacher in a public school to try and have that conversation with the students because it would, and because of the limitations that we have on sex education. The sex education in the state is limited to just denial and absenteeism. There's no talking about that. Also, in Texas, we have a law now that blocks Pornhub unless you present your identification and you're able to prove that you are over 18 years old. And I think Pornhub responded by saying they're going to block Texas, and they're doing it to all the states in the United States that have adopted similar laws. And yet there's still other sites available that, it's whack-a-mole on the internet. You know, there's plenty of ways to find this stuff if you're dedicated to it. And also there's ways to spoof your IP address. They have programs and things you can buy. I don't know how they work, but they're out there. So what about that response that the state of Texas has saying, okay, we're going to lock down, we're trying to protect our children. This is, you know, the rationale that they presented to everyone saying, and so we're going to block this because clearly this is having a negative impact, but yet I don't really think it's working to the fullest extent. And then they're being sued by groups like the ACLU saying that this is blocking freedom of expression, access to this type of – so what's your reaction?
I mean, this is interesting because, you know, I'm not an American, so it's sort of looking from the outside in a sense. And, you know, the whole sort of discussion around free speech is being like a European sort of citizen, that is very much something – I mean, that's a non-issue in a sense. But I do recognize, and I've seen that for many years working with this issue, that that is sort of the divider in a sense when, you know, when it comes to, porn, discussions around porn, with my sort of European naive eyes, I'm just like, what's the problem? But I understand that wouldn't hold up in court. But still, I have to just side with the kids. And I'm not saying that there aren't a better legal solution out there. There absolutely might be. What I am saying is that for the kids and for our children and for these next generations to come, the groups sort of now in this debate opposing each other have to come together and talk. And it's not only just talk, but actually be very open to finding a solution that benefits our children. Right. Because I also do see that this sort of argument that, well, this is, you know, impacting or it's like, you know, inhibiting our free speech. I do see that I do see the point. But I would also say that that sort of argument actually kind of shuts people off, to be honest, which should be not what some, you know, somebody, fan of free speech should be wanting to happen. So I think, why not take the initiative then? You know, gather the people that you don't agree with that are saying that we need have, you know, we need to have age verification. Gather those people and find a solution. Work together. Be the adult, I guess,
Right. So, I mean,
for
it's
that
like the
child.
genie is out of the bottle. Pornography is out there, and you're not going to be able to shut it down. And maybe, I don't know what the future holds, but yeah. And wouldn't it be better to figure out ways to educate our children to recognize that this is not real life? This is not what, you know, this is not what, how humans typically reproduce.
Yeah, and you know what? I would also say that because that's such a good point. And I would say that while sort of the adults are discussing, perhaps even arguing at times, I would say it is so encouraging whenever I'm in a classroom speaking to young people about this that you know they get it right off the bat. It's like you know, in a way, it's this non-discussion in a sense, because they're also so aware of the impact that porn has had on their lives. And on their expectations, like you mentioned, on their relationships. And a lot of, especially guys, will tell me that, you know what, I was using porn, you know, from, you know, the age of 12. And because I hadn't had any sort of intimate relationship by then, I had nothing to compare with. But once I was like 16, 17, I, you know, debuted sexually, had my first sexual intercourse, you know, oh my God, that's when you kind of realize. How different porn is from real life sexual relationships.
Yeah, but
But
for a lot
I
of
would
people, that's it.
really,
Their mind has been, you know, they've been harmed.
yeah, absolutely. With expectations, with pressure. You know, just the other day I was speaking to a young couple and they told me that they had sort of ended up in this dilemma in a sense that he was choking her, thinking she wanted it, but she didn't want it, and he didn't want it, but nobody talked about it because porn
Because they
had sort of
present
set that.
violence in pornography as, you know, as what you do.
Yeah, and it also connects, you know, back to what you mentioned about sort of addiction and the brain, because the neurons, that's like a classic saying, the neurons that fire together wire together. So it doesn't take that much time before your brain picks up on sort of violent porn being hot in a sense. Like your brain will start to think that if you combine, I mean, basically to speak a little Frencher, if you're jerking off and you are watching porn, your brain is going to connect sexual pleasure to if the porn you're watching is
Right, and you
violent, you
have a
know, then
release.
violent
You're
porn.
messing with the chemicals in your brain. You're going to have a
Yeah.
response, you know, and
Absolutely.
that's definitely conditioning a person towards maladaptive behavior.
Yeah, and it's that again to what we were saying about the nervous system and sort of when we are making porn usage wrong, it actually sort of makes it more difficult to get out of. And it's the same sort of with the brain because if you are reacting and responding to porn in a certain way, in a way that makes you feel, oh my God, this is so exciting, I want more, your brain is normal. You know, your reward pathway is just working and operating the way that it's supposed to. So what porn is doing, it's sort of hijacking, in lack of a better word, it's hijacking the reward pathway.
Right, and it can also burn out that neural pathway, those receptors, making you demand more and more, taking it to the limit, and taking you further and further away from what actual human intimacy is actually like, and causing people to have a breakdown.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what we did, but we just can't talk about this in, you know, around the dinner table. We're kind of like, you know, forced to talk. I guess, you know, talk about it in, I don't know, hushed tones. How do we help people? And there's so many other issues involved. So we got to take a break here coming up, but we need to talk about the human trafficking aspect of this, the child abuse, that's part of this. You know, we're going to talk about all these other issues, the billions of dollars that are being made off of this. How do we help people? And Bob and Martha, I got you on the board. I'm going to get you on the air. I wanted to wait until after the break, so you have plenty of time to say what you got to say. And our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is an adult conversation about pornography and its impact in our society on all of us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about pornography. This is an adult conversation, but we're talking about the impact it's having on our kids, on each other. It's warping our expectations about our relationships, about how we treat our intimate partners. This having these expectations, they are leading to breakups, people adopting dangerous behavior. This is being fueled also by human trafficking. And there's a lot of bad, dark stuff connected to pornography world. We do need to talk about it. We can't ignore it anymore. And we invite you to call in. The number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. So let's go to Bob. Bob, you're on the phone. Thank you for calling in. You're on the air.
I wanted to discuss objective reality. Kids need to be trained to objective reality. So do adults. To wit, Friends, Beverly Hills 90210, WWE is real. A bunch of college students working on a coffee bar are not going to have a huge apartment with a skylight and a balcony in New York City. Going back to the glory days of Playboy, that model spent hours in makeup. The crew spent hours lighting it. And then it was airbrushed for days. On top of a lot of this also comes down to discussion. A lot of people on the legitimate side of porn, it's been discussed, and they were specifically hired for what they are into.
And so is that your thought, Bob? I don't know what your point you're making.
It's not – porn isn't reality. 90210 isn't reality. People need to get that. You know what I mean?
Sure, I gotcha. And that's what we want to do. We want to highlight that fact. Bob, thank you for the call. So Maria Aline, a public speaker, author, educator. She has been focusing on educating the public about pornography and its health effects. What about Bob's comments?
Yeah, I hear him. I think that is, the main issue in a sense, when it comes to sort of the message that porn is sending to young people, because you do not see, if I got him correctly, you do not see sort of what goes into the making of today's porn.
Well, let me ask you, Maria, let me ask you, yeah. What do we know from studies, research that has been done about people watching pornography? Is there documented evidence that shows overconsumption of this has a negative impact on people's lives?
Yeah, there's actually about 50 years of research going in depth about this.
We can say the same thing about Friends. You know, you watch Friends, maybe that'll damage your life too. But we do know about pornography.
We do know. And because there have been so much research, and I would encourage checking out a guy called Max Waltman. He's a researcher, and he has a book just named Pornography, where he really tells you all about the research. There have been research on the consumer side and on the production side. And when it comes to the consumer side, especially related to what sort of impact porn can have on our attitudes, it has been shown that porn can increase us believing in rape myths and sort of having a lower empathy for people who have been victimized, victims of sexual abuse. There are even studies that talk about a connection between porn usage and coercing your partner into some sort of sexual act that they're not willing to do. There are research on the connection between porn usage and sex buying, also about how porn can possibly produce what we're calling in the research sexually aggressive attitudes. Now, a disclaimer, that doesn't mean obviously, what I'm not saying that everybody who's using porn is gonna, end up believing all of these and have these, changed attitudes. But there is a statistically higher likelihood of that happening. And so that is the connection that we have to talk about.
All right. Thank you so much for that. Let's go to Martha on the phones. Martha, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm taking a course currently, and we're talking about this topic. So my question is, do you think there are some positive effects of pornography that contribute to society from a sociological perspective?
Great question, Martha. Thank you so much for asking that. So positive aspects of pornography. There was a time when, Tropic of Cancer or Lady Chatterley's Lover and books like that were considered pornography. Now we see them as art.
Yeah. No, I love that question, Martha. And I talk about that as well in schools, and it's so important. And I think for to sort of again for sort of getting these groups together and finding solutions, we absolutely have to include all aspects. And so I love that question. And I would say that the sort of main positive thing is because and but this is sort of this is a good thing and a bad thing, I would say, because a lot of kids will turn to porn because they're not getting the sex education that they want to have, that they desperately are sort of lacking. And so porn can then give you inspiration. Porn can also teach you about how, what to do in a sense. And then you can discuss, well, should you try what you're seeing in porn at home? Well, that's up for debate. But I think porn is filling a gap, and sort of a void, which is a great signal to all of us that we have to start talking about porn as part of our sex education in schools. And just sort of like inspiration, I would say, something that a lot of youth are telling me that they get inspiration. But also, when it comes to somebody trying to sort of figure out their sexuality, it can be a tool to sort of see what am I into. As well,
Well, what about some of the myths about pornography that people hang on to help them justify that it is not as harmful as it actually is? I mean, people don't recognize the fact that there are many people who are exploited in pornography who did not give consent, or they're too young to give consent, or they are being exploited because of they are homeless, or that they have a drug addiction, or there's a lot of stuff happening off camera that really should make us think, reconsider, like what is happening here, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. There's research on that as well, with the with the production side, in terms of what sort of what background do people in porn usually have? And I've met people, a lot of people in porn that will tell you that this is their own free choice. And then I think it's really important to then just remember that who am I to judge, right? So if somebody tells me that, I'm going to believe them. With that said, I have seen the research, and there are numbers sort of telling us about people's background when it comes to being in porn, like you just mentioned, with experiencing homelessness. Domestic violence is also something that you can see in studies. Growing up, then as a child, you would see domestic violence. And drug abuse, mental health issues, et cetera. And again, I think we need to acknowledge the research, and then we also need to include the people who are saying, I'm doing this because I want to do this. So I see that, it's possible to acknowledge both of these sort of aspects to the production side to it.
Okay, let's go to a caller, David. And David, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me okay? Because I'm outside. I don't know if the
Yeah,
wind is.
you sound good.
Okay, great. I was wondering if your guest knows of any population or society that has a healthy relationship with sex and an open discussion with pornography. I remember going to Japan and being just flabbergasted about the fact that they have such explicit material just out in the open, and even like school-aged children were walking by just out in the street, and they didn't seem to bother them at all. And it seemed very different from my trips to Europe. So I was just wondering if you had any insight into that.
All right. So societies, I wonder, even in ancient societies, you know, different relationships with sex and pornography.
Yeah, that's such a good question. Well, I'm not a historian, but I will say that it's quite interesting to sort of compare, let's say, Japan to Sweden, you know? And I think what I'm seeing in Sweden, if I'm going to give some creds to Sweden, is that the sex education, whilst it is absolutely not perfect, it is, I would say, it's quite good. It can be quite good if you have a good teacher that cares about the topic. And I would say that the openness that I'm seeing in a country like Sweden is actually very beneficial, because it makes young people feel like they can talk about this. And that's something that we worked on in Sweden for many, many, many years, to get it included, you know, conversations about porn, to have that not only included, but mandatory. So now that is, in fact, actually mandatory in Swedish schools when having sort of the sex education. You have to talk about porn now, which I think is really good. So I'm going to actually, I'm going to give it to Sweden, even though, you know, when you're working in Sweden, which I am a lot, then I'm critical, you know, because then I want to see things improving. But looking for, you know, just the
but in places like Japan, where they're having falling birth rates, you got to wonder, you know, where you have a lot of fetishization happening in society.
Yeah.
You wonder, like, you know, and we're seeing that all over in Western society where birth rates are falling. I wonder if that has anything to do with exposure, early exposure to pornography, constant exposure to all this extreme kink. What is that doing to people's minds and their basic needs for human intimacy? We're going to take a break here, and I'm going to get Sean on the air when we come back from the break. And if you would like to call in and talk about pornography, the problem of it, or do you think we're just being Puritan and this is just a moral panic, you know, like other things in the past, or maybe we should just, you know, this accept it, that this is the way it's going to be. Give us a call, 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. The Source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're having a conversation about pornography with an educator about pornography, Maria Aline. She has a TED Talk called Let's Talk Porn that has garnered over 10 million views. She is educating people about the harmful health effects of overexposure to pornography for young people and adults, and also the negative impacts of the production of pornography. You can call in. The number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. And we're going to go to Sean. And Sean, you're on the air.
Yes. So I hadn't heard yet, and I hope maybe you do get a chance to talk about feminism porn and what that is and how that's different. Maybe I missed it. But I did have a question about sort of just that, you know, technology now. And clearly there's evidence showing it's going in one direction. It's harmful. But we now have this technology where it's, you know, this like godlike AI and these algorithms just pointing a laser beam at our caveman brain. Unless someone addresses that issue, I'm wondering, are there any places that actually have or are doing well to address how technology is, you know, being used in this way? Are there any nations, any states, anywhere at all where they have effectively?
So do you mean like the AI to protect people from pornography, or using AI to create pornography?
I mean, well, not AI to create new product, but in the terms of the algorithms that we have are just, they know how, here's the next video, here's the next video, here's the next video, and it's made as an addiction machine. it's only gotten worse in that way. And so it doesn't seem like, it seems like everything is being designed in a way to get consumption more and more and more and more. And unless something systematically addresses that, I don't see how this can potentially be even addressed, even with more information on people, when it's the drug is being injected right into our brains.
All right. Well, thank you for that. You know, Sean, appreciate it. So is the algorithm of going online, social media, I know X removed all the barriers for pornography. The Twitter thing that Elon Musk has is now also polluted with pornography. If you're trying to avoid it, you really can't. So how does that work, Maria?
Yeah, that's such a good, that's a smart thought, first and foremost. And I mean, I would like to see some companies working on that. I mean, that would be so sweet to really use AI as a tool to reduce exposure, especially when it comes to minors. So I love that idea, actually. I would say what I'm seeing, correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, but I mean, what I am seeing is that that is not happening today. I would say it's the other way around. And speaking to people in the industry, they're actually quite upset with AI when it comes to porn. A lot of them will share that AI, because it, you know, it is stealing the content in a sense, you know. So when it is sort of, when AI porn is the case, it it originates from actual content that some person created. So I would say that a lot of people are seeing that AI is stealing content and AI porn is just perhaps not going away, I think, but it can, I think, upset a lot of people within the industry. That's what I'm seeing. And when it comes to feminism and feminist porn, just sort of
that?
The first part. So feminist porn is argued being porn that is produced in a equal way, you could say. Gender equality is sort of the value, the core value when that type of porn is being produced and made. And sure, I would say absolutely feminist porn, if you want to call it, fair trade, you know, ecological, whatever you want to call it, you know, just like good porn, sure, it's out there, absolutely. My argument would be that for somebody who's 25, sure, you might actually spend some time sort of altering your porn experience and looking for that type of porn, if you're aware of sort of the problems that can be surrounding porn production. However, if you are 14, you're not going to spend that amount of time and you're not even going to know about it. So you are going to end up on Pornhub or the other tube sites, which is the problem.
So the caller, Jennifer, and Jennifer, you're on the air.
Yes, I was calling because of just the parameters that they have with SAISD. You know, we have tried several times, but their parents have tried to warn them, tell them about pornography that is coming through the student iPads. And these are children of kinder and first grade. And it seems that if the school itself has pushed things under the rug or even have banned the volunteers that have found this issue in the school, hidden in the school, and have blacklisted them from coming back on campus.
Well, describe the problem for me, issue, Jennifer. Right? What is the problem?
Yeah.
What is
so
happening?
So what's happening is the children's iPads, there's pornography on them. They're able to go onto YouTube. They're able to pull pornography, pull videos of and pictures of, you know, naked ladies, you know, of people in the acts of sex, or you know, showing way too much, or even
right. So these are,
you know,
school issued iPads that they're given to kids for their education, but they're able to use that to access pornography.
Yes, they're able to access pornography. Now, it could be as simple song as you know, some regular songs that come out on the radio nowadays, and if it says big booty, you know, and a child is singing that song and you're the iPad, it's going to pull that up just in voice command, you know. And you know, when other volunteers have even seen this on the iPads, and when it's been brought up to the school, it's bad, you parent, bad child, get it fixed. And we're like, hey, can we find out what's going on here? what happened? SAISD, you know, I've called SAISD, I've called the ITSD department, and where they have mentioned to me, we weren't notified in enough time to find out what the issue is. All right. The iPads have been wiped clean. And I said, well, I don't understand that. Your ITSD, these parameters should have been made for these children that are accessing, you know, trying to access their educational needs. And just because they say something.
Well, Jennifer, thank you for the call. Thank you for bringing this to our attention. I think you bring up a great point that when we have a society that where this material is so easily accessible, it will get into the hands of people that we're trying to protect and nurture. So, Maria, I'm sure you don't know about the intricacies of our local school districts and what have you, but I think this brings up a point that you have, is that it's everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I've seen parents sort of get quite in this activism mode around this issue after seeing what she just mentioned, that kids can access porn through their school iPads. That is something that I think a lot of parents do not know of. And I think if you're a parent listening to this, I would just, you know, try that iPad and see what you can actually access to make sure that your child's, school iPad can offer that. But yeah, unfortunately, I've seen that a lot of times as well. Yeah.
So we know that this is a multi-billion dollar industry, and the money is not going into the people who are actually, you know, on camera. It's more going into the people who run the sites. Even though a lot of this material is free, they make money off of advertisers' imprints. Also, they have links to – they sell ad impressions to paid sites. There's credit card money floating around that could be locked down if there was a political will to do so. I mean, should there be a push to lock down the porn industry? Do you think that's possible? Push it back and make it harder to access? Would that be a way to deal with this?
I mean, I would say that sort of the way to deal with this now, today, is to talk more with the people in porn, actually to include the people in the porn industry in these conversations. And I think that a lot of us would be surprised, because what I'm hearing when I'm speaking to people in porn is that they actually do agree that kids shouldn't have access to porn. I've never heard anybody that I've spoken to and interviewed in the porn industry saying that they do think, well, yes, kids should access Pornhub. Like, never have I heard that. And a lot of the people producing porn are going to be parents themselves. So it's not that foreign of a concept to discuss whether or not kids should have access to porn. So I think that's where we can actually, unite and find common ground. That's my first sort of step that I would like to see happening.
So porn addiction is not really recognized as a medical thing. It's not seen as a real addiction. Does that need to change? And if it did change, would it change anything?
Yeah, I think DSM should absolutely take a hard look at porn addiction. But I do also want to say that while it may not be recognized by the DSM, it is recognized in some sense when it comes to porn, when it's compulsive usage. That is recognized, that it can be a compulsive usage, which I think is sort of, I'm happy with that in a sense. And I think we can still work on this issue and help people who have a difficult relationship to porn, sort of relying on the fact that we do know that compulsive use is a thing. And we have studies that sort of can tell us that porn usage have this sort of, or can have an addictive quality to it that is similar to the usage of other drugs. And the way to sort of know this is just to look at the brain, right? So we know how the brain works, right. We know how the reward pathway works, and we know that your porn sort of brain, or your brain on porn, is gonna just light up like a Christmas tree when exposed to porn,
right? And that's not a good thing. Maria Aline, thank you so much for talking to us. Her TED Talk is Let's Talk Porn, over 10 million views, trying to spark an international conversation about this important topic. Thank you so much for joining us today. That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Technical support by Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, and Yvette Benavides. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.